rolling dice and drawing cards to solving puzzles and opening locks.
For beginners who are new to games, as well as experienced players who want something new.
Let us take you through the exciting world of gaming and help you design a great gaming get-together.
We're your hosts, Lauren and Greg, and Friday is game night.
Happy Friday, everyone!
In this episode, we'll discuss how to design a great roleplay character and improve your roleplaying experience. We'll list our favorite games to introduce newbies, and of course, we'll give our monthly escape room report and talk about our Friday favorites.
When it comes to certain games, and yes, of course, this topic applies to Dungeons and Dragons, but there's plenty of other games out there that include role-playing. Most likely be using Dungeons and Dragons as a base model, because that's the one most people are familiar with, but there's plenty of other options out there. You know, don't get me wrong. And you can apply role-playing to lots of other games, too. Heck, you can role-play with Clue. Like, oh, Professor Plum, he needs to go to the library to, you know, read up on how to get a girl in 10 days without really trying or whatever, you know. Role-playing adds an extra level to a game, an extra level of entertainment and immersion. Mm-hmm. It gets you connected to what you are doing in the game, and it lets you kind of get out a little bit of that acting. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody likes to act a little bit. You know, even if it's not like your main thing, even if you weren't like in theater in high school, college, whatever, everyone likes to act around a little bit, you know, do like little impressions, you know, tell little jokes. And I kind of realized that, especially in our little core group of friends we have for game night, that some people do it and some people don't. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. But I wanted to put together an episode where if you do want to try role-playing and you just aren't quite sure where to start or like how you get into that, I thought I'd put together kind of like a little guidelines, you know, of how to do that. So we're going to talk about how to create a good character for roleplay, and then once you're in the actual game, how to turn it and increase your enjoyment for the experience. Okay, keep in mind that I'm going to list several things that you can do with your character. Mm-hmm. None of these are must-dos.
Yes.
You know, these are just ways that most people recommend on how to do this. And I did actually get a chance to go down to a gaming store recently, and they had this big session of D&D going on. I did not know this, actually. As much of a game nerd as I am, I didn't know they actually had, like, D&D League play.
Yeah, that's where, like, new to me.
Essentially, what it is like once a new campaign or like kind of parentheses story gets released, then like all these groups will play that same story at the same time, but like in their like separated thing, you know.
Do they all? So I have a question. Do they all? And maybe you might not know this. Do they play like the same character from campaign to campaign, or from?
No. Yeah, it would be like character? Like, okay, you have a character, an elf ranger named Taryn. You know, so like you would be carrying her over.
Okay.
It's just that now we're going to start in this adventure.
Okay.
You know, I mean, of course, you have the option as the player to, like, let's say that you were playing as, like, a cleric, you know, someone who heals and, like, does prayers. And you're like, no, I didn't quite enjoy that. I'd rather be someone who just punches things with my fist. Okay, well, then now you could be a fighter this time.
Okay.
So essentially, as I understand it anyways, or at least this is the way I would play it, is from campaign to campaign, you can then decide, do I want to continue to invest in this character, or do I want to try something else? It's like it's like leasing. You know, like you're never fully bought in. You can just like, I'm going to move.
you don't own it in the end.
In the end, I'm just going to walk away from this. You know, there's no real commitment. You didn't sign anything in blood. If you are looking to, and like I said, it's interesting how they'll all start at the same time. Like, this is the day, August 1st, that we're all going to start the, you know, Desolation of Smaug campaign from Lord of the Rings. And I mean, in your little group of like 4 or 6 people or whatever it is, you know, like you'll go through it as you naturally would progress at your speed. If other people get done before you, then they'll just have time to like mess around and do like made up stuff for fun on the side, you know. And it's not like it's a competition. It's just we're all going through the same story so we could talk about it afterwards.
True.
It's like watching something on Netflix. Like, did you hear about this great documentary? Oh, it's so amazing. You have to watch it so we can talk about it later. It's like that. It's like I played through this thing. Remember that bartender in the little town, like the third town you get to? What a jerk. You know, like kind of, well, my DM didn't play him as a jerk at all. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, he had a knife.
It's funny too, because then too, like, some groups are probably faster than others. Like sometimes, like I know I even get frustrated with our own group because I'm like, oh my God, you guys are taking forever. Like, let's
We're going to address that today.
Yeah.
We're going to address that today. Okay, so, but let's say you do have a role-playing game that you want to get into, mm-hmm. and you're thinking about, well, how do I want to design a character? Because you see that some people really get into, and I'm not saying, I'm not going to talk about getting into costumes, nothing physical. We're talking about on the paper, you know. I realized as I was writing this up, one of the best, I think, universal examples for this that we can base upon is Inigo Montoya from The Princess Bride. Now, go with me on this. He is a great character, uh-huh. and you'll find out why. So first of all, with your character, you want to give their physical description. Mm-hmm. People want to know who you are, what you look like, yeah. you know, so beyond name, right?
And you can be as detailed as you want to be or...
Or as little. You know, as little. I'm not saying you have to say like, oh, he has like 23 moles.
Yeah.
You know.
Size 14 shoes.
Yeah, don't need all of that. 14, Jesus, this guy's got clown feet.
He's a dragonborn.
But yeah, so you want to give basic things like maybe hair and eye and skin color, you know, if any of that applies. Maybe yeah. they're a bald dragonborn, so skin it's more scale color, you know. And then if you would like, maybe give them a unique trait, like a physical trait that stands out. Maybe they have a tattoo covering half their face, you know. Like remember in Ender's Game, the role that Ben Kingsley plays, that Maori guy, where like he has like tattoos all over his face because that's just part of his culture.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like it's in the future, no one has that, but he does because it's part of his culture.
Uh-huh.
And it shows that he adheres to tradition. See, so just a physical thing like that makes his character stand out. Maybe they have an unusual color of hair, mm-hmm. you know, or color eyes. Or maybe it's kind of like how some people do, how they have like one blue eye, one green eye, you know, just something uh-huh. that makes them stand out. Or it could be something that they got later in life. Like in Inigo Montoya, he has a scar on either cheek of his face, mm-hmm. right? And that stands out.
And it's part of his story and how he got that scar.
And it's part of his story. We're going to get into that. Yeah, but like even if you didn't have a story for like how uh-huh. you got that scar, you can just say, my character has this really wicked scar like across his nose. Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe we'll find out what that is later. But it's interesting. If I'm a person in this world and I see your character coming at me and they're like, let's just say 5'10" woman, with average colored hair, eyes, skin, whatever, you know. But I see the scar across the face. Ooh.
Like
that gives that gives me an impression, uh-huh. see? You also want to talk about a little bit of their history, their backstory.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you're doing the backstory, you don't need to write a whole novel. I'm not saying that, like, he was born on the 4th of July, you know, whatever, you know.
You can, but then no one will want to play with you.
Well, it's just like...
Or, you know, you can in your head.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you want to give a little bit of backstory. And most of the people that I talked to when I went to this store, uh-huh. and like I got a chance to talk to some people who were in the middle of their homebrew. Uh-huh. You know, just like doing stuff that's like made up on the side, not an official campaign. Some of them were nice enough to talk to me. They said that typically you want about 2 to 3 kind of bullet points mm-hmm. to your character's history. It doesn't have to be a long, explained, drawn-out thing. It can be. But like a quick little thing that not only gives you a little bit more depth, but also helps inform your decisions the character will make.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So for example, it could be something like they had tons of brothers and sisters, or they were an only child, you know, mm-hmm. something like that. You know, that it depends upon like how social they are, uh-huh. you know, or it could even be something like a traumatic event like, oh, my character once almost drowned in the river.
I think another good example of a character that a lot of people know is the Game of Thrones, the Hound.
Yes.
The Hound is afraid of fire.
Because his brother stuck his face in fire. Yeah. So if you watch Game of Thrones, there's a scene where, I forget how to describe it, but he's like fighting on the beach, like at King's Landing. Uh-huh. And there's fire there.
And he's like, nope.
No. And he like goes the other way.
Yeah. But then later in the series, he has to kind of get used to it a couple mm-hmm. times. Like he has to kind of almost face his fear and be like, yes, I know this, but I'm going to keep going.
And then see, that's also part of his character growth, because later on he gets to join up, spoilers, with the cult who is kind of like surrounding like, you know, fires, like where the god is or whatever.
Yeah.
And so for someone who is deadly afraid of fire to join this religious order is a big arc. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you'll get that with the character. It doesn't have to happen. But if it does, then it's just kind of like, well, the stars aligned. And,
yeah. You know. But I mean, I think it's nice to be able to like, for you guys, I'm hoping to be able to kind of see what we're talking about and relate it to like common fictional characters. So you can kind of see, oh, that's what they're talking about.
Yeah. So going back to Inigo Montoya as my uh-huh. base example, his backstory is a six-fingered man mm-hmm. was going to buy a sword from my father, who was a blacksmith. Right. So right there, uh-huh. occupation, blacksmith.
Yeah.
Right. Or son of a blacksmith.
Uh-huh.
He was going to buy a sword. He wanted to pay half price. My father said no, because my father's an honorable guy.
And he spent a lot of time working and making this great sword.
And he did great craftsmanship, and so the Six-Finger Man killed him. Mm-hmm. So now I'm on a personal lifelong quest for revenge.
Yeah.
That's like two or three bullet points right there, and that informs every decision about that he's going to make.
Yeah.
Think about the movie, if you've seen it recently. There's a moment where they are storming the castle. Mm-hmm. You know, the Wesley as the Dread Pirate Roberts, Fezzik the Giant, and Inigo Montoya, they're storming the castle, and they have a plan of action. We're going to go inside. We're going to get Princess Buttercup and get out, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to try to not kill as many people as we can. And Neho sees the Six-Fingered Man. He knows that's him. And he abandons the plan mm-hmm. to go chase after him, to the point that he makes Fezzik abandon the plan at one point, say, I need your help. Kick down this door. He's getting away. Mm-hmm. That informs all his decision. So in the role-playing thing, let's say I have a character who is afraid of water. Because they had some traumatic experience as a child. They were told by a gypsy, you're going to die by drowning.
Uh-huh.
Right? If the rest of the party has to go on a sea voyage for 3 months, mm-hmm. guess who's not wanting to get on the boat?
Yeah.
We can either take a journey across the sea that'll take us 3 months, or we can walk around for a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I vote for a year and a half. Right? And like that's going to be a theme, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, like we said, it can also be as little as you want. You know, we had a character who, they were just kind of contradictory. So they would always just sort of do the opposite of what you wanted them
because
to do.
Because he was, yeah, he had something about his character where he's like, I don't respect anyone else's authority but my own.
Yeah.
And if you put a date in my head, I'm going to purposely go the other way just to prove that I have independence.
Yeah, he kind of played like the game as like a chaos factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I first started, my first character was half elf, half human.
Oh, that's right, you're half elf,
and so
yeah.
My whole idea was, oh, well, they're neither, and so they've kind of never fit into either, and therefore they've got a bit of a chip on their shoulder.
And see, that's great, because then whenever you're approached by one of those races or more, you kind of are a little bit more standoffish with them. Like, you didn't really fully accept me.
Yeah.
And neither did you. So mm-hmm. why should I... don't treat me like I'm your brother or sister. You know, like, no, this is an automatic...
And you're not going to necessarily... They're not suddenly your key to the elf world.
Yeah.
They're like, nope, I don't want to have anything to do with that.
Yeah, you're like, that's racist.
Yeah.
Right? So just a few little things like that could help inform your character and the decisions that
make. Yeah, it could be a fatal flaw. It could be mm-hmm. all sorts of things.
Oh, speaking of flaws, that was another thing. Add a flaw to your character. It's not as fun if you play Superman. Because mm-hmm. Superman, yeah, he's a cool superhero, but like his one flaw is a super rare rock that has like almost no chance of showing up in everyday life, you know?
Uh-huh.
So, like, it doesn't have to be something that's going to kill your character, but just give them a weakness of some kind or, like, a personality flaw that, like, can come into play.
Uh-huh.
I had two great examples from some of the people I talked to. This one guy I talked to, he once played this orc, like, half-orc character who loved the taste of mutton. To the point that if he saw a sheep in a field, he would recklessly chase that thing down so he could get some, you know? And it's like, no. So his friends would be like, nope, Gary, come back. Like, you know, kind of thing. And another one that was interesting, and I like how this would play out. I'd love to try this sometime. There was this young lady I talked to,
mm-hmm.
and she plays characters who are highly superstitious. And mm-hmm. like, you think in a world of D&D, like with magic, like, well, what does that mean?
Uh-huh.
It means that like, she will avoid any possible chance to break a mirror. She will never walk under a ladder. If mm-hmm. her turn, in terms of movement, is like 5 squares away to like go and save somebody, but you have to go directly under a ladder across a black cat's path, she will waste an entire turn walking around mm-hmm. just so that she doesn't have to deal with the superstition of bad luck.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fantastic. See, it's like little informed things like that, you know, and then maybe...
And it's one of those things that's not going to come into play probably every game.
No.
But when it does...
But when it does, it makes you have to reevaluate like, ooh...
Mm-hmm.
Could I do this?
Yeah.
Can I do this? You know?
Yeah, and then, you know, well, I guess that it's probably going to get, you know, to your next point about as far as, you know, does your character have a specific voice as well?
Yeah, and I had never really thought about this personally. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I kind of did it a little bit on my own, but this one guy, he specifically mentioned that you want to give your character a voice. Now, he doesn't mean necessarily that you have to do a cute little voice of something, you know.
Which
you
don't, Greg likes to do. But
I like to, but you don't...
He's good at voices.
Yeah. You don't have to do that. What he means is the best way to roleplay, whether you give your characters these backstories or not, is to remember that there is a dividing line between you and your character.
Mm-hmm.
This character is... I mean, unless you design them to be you, which, you know... You can.
Uh-huh.
But...
Not as fun, but...
Well, it depends on the situation, I'd say.
Yeah.
But, like, there's a difference between you and the character that you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so whether it's you actually try to adopt an accent or some kind of change in your pitch, like you talk higher or something, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah,
that's one thing. But another thing you can do is just use different language, like in terms of like maybe my guy's an old English knight, so I would speak in these and thous and what hoes. Uh-huh, yeah, know?
Or it could be, you know, Inigo Montoya has a catchphrase. Maybe your character
has a catchphrase, yeah,
or you know, has some kind of tic. Like for instance, the character I've been most currently playing in our role playing game, he's kind of like this wealthy baron,
mm-hmm.
and he's always kind of stuck up. So his immediate thing anytime anyone questions him is, don't you know who I am?
Yeah, do you know who I am?
Yeah.
And I always imagine him kind of like scoffing yes. back, you don't know who I am?
Yeah.
You know?
And sometimes I'll use that kind of character trait of his to my advantage because it's kind of like, oh, well, he wanders in and he'll just be like, I'm just going to wander in. And if they question me, I'll be like, do you know who I am? And
yeah.
I'll make a big scene.
You know? Literally walked into a pirate tavern on a private pirate island where there should be no outsiders at all. And you just said, don't you know who I am?
Yeah. And I just start ordering people around and playing along with it to see if it goes.
Like... And it works. So see, like, that's kind of the fun
yeah,
of it.
Yeah. And
know?
I don't do a funny voice or anything. It's just, I think, okay, this is who my character is.
Mm-hmm.
This is what they would kind of do and say.
And see, that leads me to the main point of it, is that it gets you into the mind frame of the Baron.
Uh-huh.
You're not thinking like Lauren anymore. You're thinking like Baron Joffrey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're like, I own this place. All of you should be working for
yeah.
me. Get back to work. Hey, you pick up that heavy thing and move it for me. I don't feel like exercising today. You know, kind of thing. You know,
yeah.
like hands on your hips. No, thank you. You know, kind of thing. Like, oh, you'll get paid next Thursday. I won't be here, but, you know, someone
yeah,
will take
you. Someone will pay you. I'm sure.
So it's all about kind of finding that way,
mm-hmm.
whether it's through your specific diction, the words you choose to use, whether it's, you know, maybe talking with a different cadence or pattern in your voice, you know? If you're playing someone who you think is a big, dumb kind of jock, maybe you just kind of slow down what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not using different words. I'm just slowing down how I say it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that makes me think, like, maybe I'm not too smart, you know, kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So it's important to keep that difference between you and your character. And once you get all that established, then you have to come upon what is one of the greatest tools in role-playing. But once again, it's not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that they have in role-playing is...
And this is, like, not just D&D. This is, like, most role-playing.
This is all role-playing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You will see this everywhere.
Yeah.
And actually,
and you'll see it referenced in things that are not role-playing based,
which we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like a personality test. Like,
uh-huh.
you know, I forget what it's called, but it's like that personality test where you're like, I'm an HJIP or whatever,
yeah.
you know.
Uh-huh.
It's got
the
some...
Myers-Briggs.
Thank you. It's like
yeah.
it's like Braxton Hicks or something. I don't know. That's a pregnancy thing, I think.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so there's this thing called alignment.
Mm-hmm.
In role-playing games. And what alignment is, typically it's agreed upon that it's, imagine like a tic-tac-toe board, like a 3x3 grid. On the top, you have what says lawful, neutral, chaotic. And on the side, you have what says good, neutral, evil.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of like draw like your fingers along the things to see where you're at.
Yeah, and you can almost plug in any character to these too.
Yeah.
Like... And even characters in literature, characters in TV, you can probably find a spot for them on this.
You can probably
chart.
Find a spot for your own mom in here.
Yeah.
You know, or your dog
yeah.
or whatever, you know. So let me explain what the differences are here. Pretty much what this alignment says is it's a very base personality matrix, which in general will help determine what kind of decisions and rationale that character makes.
Uh-huh.
A good character has altruistic tendencies. They like to do things that are just for the sake of being good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have respect for life. They have concern for the dignity of sentient beings. So like maybe they'll slay an animal, you know, to eat. But if there's a child and that I could eat the kid, mm-hmm. I'm not going to eat the kid.
And they're not going to just kill the animal to kill the animal.
Yeah. In some cases, they'll be even willing to make personal sacrifices for others.
Uh-huh.
You know, like look at the movie Aladdin. The very first time that we see him save the cat. Is he is starving, he has a loaf of bread, he sees two other younger kids who can't get food, he gives them his food.
Uh-huh.
He's willing to sacrifice his own dinner so that these two can eat.
Mm.
Meanwhile, an evil character implies, of course, that they would be hurting, oppressing, or even killing other characters. They would have no compassion, no qualms about doing anything evil whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
Maybe even sometimes actively pursue doing bad things. An evil character doesn't necessarily have to go out looking for bad things.
Mm-hmm.
It could just be that I see a purse and it's got, looks like it's full of money. No one's watching. Might as well.
Uh-huh.
You know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right. And a neutral character is someone who falls somewhere in between.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like they're not necessarily going to actively search out doing good or bad things, but as the situation comes up, kind of whatever would benefit me the most.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think it'd be good to try to return this purse? Maybe I'll get a reward out of it besides that. Or should I just take this and walk?
Uh-huh.
You know. Then, of course, you have the law and chaos side. Law-abiding characters follow the established order,
mm-hmm.
whatever that is. If some governmental agency or preset social contract or whatever you want to call it has a list of rules that says do this in order to be a good person, they'll follow that as best they can to the T.
Uh-huh.
Meanwhile, a chaotic person will say, nope, personal freedom. I'm going to choose what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
If they choose to happen to do something that falls within inside the law, that's just a coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm going to go ahead and steal this apple because I want an apple. I don't care that the law says I have to pay for it. I'm going to steal an apple.
Mm-hmm.
So technically, with this example, Aladdin would be chaotic good because uh-huh. he's a good guy, but he doesn't care about the rules.
Yeah.
Right. So I got this little matrix here that I got online, and we're going to use Harry Potter characters because
uh-huh.
I think people have really seen Harry Potter and are familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll kind of, you know, briefly touch on each one. So a lawful good character in Harry Potter would be Hermione. She's a good person. She's always telling Harry and Ron, you can't go in the restricted section. You're breaking the rules.
Yeah.
Right? She's always telling them what they cannot do because you're going to get in trouble.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
And like, as much as she is willing to step out and break a rule when she thinks it's for the greater good,
mm-hmm.
for the most part, she wants to follow the rules.
Yeah. If she had the option to follow the rules, she would follow the rules.
Yeah. As opposed to not following the rules,
yeah.
you know. She only ever breaks curfew when she knows it's important.
Uh-huh.
Right? A good neutral would be Harry. He's a good guy, but let's face it, rules are kind of meant to be broken,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Like, some rules are good, but I know it's called the Forbidden Forest, but I'm going to go in the forest
because anyway, yeah.
I need to follow these spiders,
uh-huh,
right?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, a chaotic good would be Sirius Black. He is a good person, but he's had some experiences in his life that caused him to want to break the rules.
Yeah, and I mean, even when they describe him as a child, he was always sort of described as being a bit more of a trickster, a bit more...
Yeah.
He's a little bit more... Although he ultimately wants to do good,
mm-hmm.
he cares a little bit more about himself
yeah.
than he does
It's a
about,
bit more selfish, yeah.
yeah.
And the only reason he wants to kill Peter is because he feels that it's vengeance upon all the people that he got killed, like
yeah.
Lily and James.
Yeah.
You know, it's not so much a personal, it's a little bit personal, but it's also for, I need to right the wrong that happened here.
Uh-huh,
you
yeah.
know, a neutral lawful, someone who follows the law, but is a little bit in the middle, Filch.
Mm-hmm.
He knows what the rules of the school are, and he doesn't actively seek out to punish or reward people, but at the same time,
he wants to.
He kind of wants to.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, he's kind of bordering a little bit towards the evil side.
Yeah, but the thing is, he doesn't, as much as like he constantly says, oh, I want to hang the students up by their feet or something.
Yeah.
But he never does it because he knows he's not allowed to do it.
He knows he's not allowed to.
Yeah.
yeah. And also, he doesn't actively say like, oh, I want to because it makes me feel good.
Yeah, and he doesn't necessarily
want to. He says,
I want
to do this because it'll teach you to not do that again.
Yeah, he doesn't necessarily, it's not so much that he wants to hurt anyone or kill anyone. He just wants to teach them their lesson.
He wants to make sure that everyone else follows the law.
Yeah.
Here are the school rules. Don't not break them.
Mm-hmm.
Don't not.
Don't not.
Yeah.
Don't make them.
Right in the middle, neutral, neutral. He's neither good nor bad. He's neither lawful or chaotic, is Professor Snape. Neutral, neutral characters will just play both sides against the middle
mm-hmm.
as much as they can. They will take a look at every single situation and make a judgment in each case, case
mm-hmm.
by case basis. You can never quite tell what they're going to do. You just got to kind of see which way they think the wind's going to blow more
uh-huh.
favorably for them. And like, look at Snape. You know, he's constantly like, oh, I got my Death Eater mark going on, you know, but also I'm working for Dumbledore, but I'm looking like I'm working for Voldemort, you know.
Uh-huh.
And like throughout the entire book, you're like, man, which one is he?
Yeah. You know?
A neutral chaotic would be Professor Lockhart. Professor Lockhart, if you don't remember, is the one who is the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher. And I think it's book 2.
Yes.
Right? Chamber of Secrets, where he is all about himself. He's selfish, and I would do whatever it takes to make myself look good, right? He's willing to make other people forget what they did and steal that credit for themselves with that memory charm that he does.
Yeah.
You know, he's not really hurting anybody.
I mean, yeah, he's not trying to hurt anyone.
But he's not doing anything for the good of humanity. He's like, buy my books because I'm awesome.
Yeah, he's very selfish.
Right. Then we get into the evil category. Now, the evil category for lawful evil is Dolores Umbridge. She is a very evil woman. We know that because she does that punishment for Harry where she makes him write the I must not tell lies and it scars into his hand, right? And she, or and I'm pretty sure, I don't remember, it's been a while since I read the books, but I think she tortures another couple of students or does something bad.
She does like things where she like makes them, gives them true serum. She's also part of that whole brigade that's like weeding out people who they say, oh, well, you're not really a witch or wizard.
Yeah, so she's kind of like a wizard Nazi, she feels like, you know. And so she believes that this is right because the Ministry of Magic says that this is the right thing to do, and I've got my orders. But she's also willing to go to that dark place of bad
and
acts.
It's kind of like she knows they're bad things, but she's technically following the law.
But she's following the
and
law.
And that's what her crux is, that she's like, but see, I'm just doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I'm doing what I was told to do, and I'm a good person for following what the ministry tells me to do.
Even though those things are evil.
Yeah. So, but that's a lawful evil character. They are following what they believe is the right thing to do, but they're willing to waterboard people, you know, essentially to get the results. A neutral evil is Voldemort. He doesn't want to completely destroy everything.
No.
He just disagrees.
Because what would he rule?
Yeah. He disagrees with what the current lawful order is. He doesn't think that wizards should be hiding, right? He is evil. He's willing to kill. He's willing to destroy everything else and, like, you know, cause explosions and all that. But at the same time, he's not necessarily saying that there shouldn't be any laws at all. He's just disagreeing with what the current order is. And he wants to change that. And then lastly, we have chaotic evil. And that's Bellatrix Lestrange to her team. She's constantly just begging Voldemort, let me kill him. Just give me one death today.
Yeah, you know? And the thing is, she even is like against the people who are on her side sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, like she would happily hurt one of them if she could.
Oh, there's a moment, if I remember correctly, where they are going, the kids are going to the Ministry of Magic to get that prophecy orb. And then Bellatrix is there and like there's two other Death Eaters there, and she like I think she attacks one of them because they say or do something that she disagrees with.
Yeah, and she's
like just on the spot, like I'll take out my own men because I don't like what you just did.
And she's constantly like against Snape because she's like, oh, well, I don't think he's part of us. But then everybody on her side is saying, no, he is. But she's like, I don't know about that.
Yeah. So kind of use that as a base of comparison for what kind of character you want to make. And keep in mind, with these alignments, don't consider them like a straitjacket for your character. You're not bound to these. But just the character that you decide that you want to play will fall into one of these nine alignments. And you could do it one of two ways. I've done it where either I picked one, I want to play this kind of character, and I forced myself to make those decisions. It kind of helped separate me from my character. Or another time, I even, like when I first was starting out, I would just make decisions for my character as I saw fit. And then I kind of went and realized, oh, I'm actually playing like a chaotic neutral character. Fancy that. I didn't realize that I could play that kind of character. You know, so you can do it from either side. But I think it's interesting to kind of analyze, what kind of person would I want to play? Or am I currently playing? You know?
And it's fun to kind of step outside yourself sometimes.
A lot of people are saying that, you know, if you were to try to evaluate yourself into this little grid that we just did, if you want to have a fun time role playing, remove yourself from one of the two categories that you naturally are. So if you yourself are a lawful good person like Hermione is, maybe make yourself a lawful neutral person, or make yourself a neutral good person. You know, like feel free to move like one or two squares away just to see how that feels. It's kind of hard to go like the full other end. Like if you're like a really good person, like lawful neutral or lawful good, it's really hard then to go play chaotic evil. Like I don't want to kill the puppy, but I feel like my character has to kill the puppy, you know. It's a little bit too much of a jump. Maybe it's like, you know, don't just dive into the deep end, you know. Wade a little bit, you know. So just in terms of building your character there, Just remember, any one of those points is a good starting point. You don't have to do any of that. You don't have to do all of that. These are just tools that you can use to help build yourself a better, more well-developed character, you mm-hmm. know. Now, in terms of role-playing itself and getting into the group,
uh-huh.
there's a couple of rules I kind of want to go over with people. First of all, you got to understand that there's a flow to these games.
Uh-huh.
It's telling a story.
Yeah.
And if you break the flow, you heard it for everybody, for the mm-hmm. entire group. So actually, I found this online in a Reddit posting. They compared it to the improv comedy technique that probably a lot of people heard. It's called Yes And.
Yes And.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes And. So here's an example that I came up with.
Okay.
Right. There's three ways you can do this.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that we're playing Dungeons and Dragons. And I, as the game master, say, suddenly a dragon appears in town square.
Mm-hmm.
We're right in front of you. Right? There's three responses a character could have. The first one is, well, that couldn't happen. This town's way too small for that to fit in here, and we would have seen it coming.
Uh-huh.
That's a stopper.
Yeah.
That's like, I gave you something, and you're trying to take that away.
Mm-hmm.
So if you kind of do like a math thing, that's like plus one, minus one, now we're at an impasse. We're zero.
Yeah.
Nothing's happening.
Uh-huh.
Thanks for ruining that, Gary. Option two is, a dragon appears in the town square. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay doesn't add anything. I'm putting the dragon there as the game master because I want to see what your reaction is.
Uh-huh.
And you're just going to stand there.
Okay.
Well, that was a thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay. So now we have plus one, plus zero.
Uh-huh.
Like, now we just have the dragon, nothing else, you know. Or the third option is a dragon appears in town square. And then the character says, well, then I'm going to immediately dive behind cover, get out my weapon, and shout to the dragon, what do you want?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Or I charge the dragon head on, or I wet myself.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever, you're doing something,
yeah.
you know. That's like a plus one, so now we're at two. Now you did something, so now I, as the game master, can build off what you did.
Yeah.
So now the dragon's going to say, like, hold up his claws. No, no, calm down.
Yeah.
Or like, do you want to go change your shorts before, you know, we begin again, you know? It's, you want to keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, it's like the don't, try not to say no.
Yeah.
Try to just go with it. And this is a message to any game masters or dungeon masters. Remember that you're the player's friend. You're on their side.
Yeah.
I am guilty of falling into this trap that just because you're controlling the enemy characters doesn't mean that you're the enemy of the players.
Mm-hmm.
You're just moving those pawns around so they can fight them. But just like how you're putting out Easter eggs for the kids to find,
mm-hmm.
remember they're supposed to be found. They're mm-hmm. not supposed to be like hidden until like next October,
uh-huh.
you know. The last little bit that we're going to have before we end this topic is there's three rules. And no matter how many people I talk to, I ask them if you could get across just like the core rules of role playing. What
uh-huh.
are they? And these ones came up the most. Rule number one, don't be what they call a rules lawyer. And that means that you go, well, actually, it says on page 62 of the player's handbook number 5 that you can't do that.
Don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy. Don't be the guy who like knows all the rules and says that doesn't work or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Unless you are playing in a group that has come to an understanding ahead of time, we are playing hardcore rules.
Mm-hmm.
We're playing very strict. Just go with it.
Yeah.
You know, fun supersedes rules 9 times out of 10.
Uh-huh,
at least
yeah.
it should, you know. So uh-huh. rule number two, don't try to regulate or control another player's actions.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they ask you for help. Don't suggest to someone else what they should do to maximize the turn.
Uh-huh.
Let them decide. Let them make mistakes. Let them triumph or fail on their own.
Mm-hmm.
It's like trying to like teach your kid how to walk and you're constantly holding their hands and you never let go of their hands.
Uh-huh.
They'll never know that they can walk or not.
Yeah.
Because you're always there, you know. And then it's like, well, why am I even playing this character?
Uh-huh.
Why don't you play my character too? So don't ever take control of another player's character. Unless they ask you for help, then you can make a suggestion, but let them have the ultimate say.
Mm-hmm.
And then number three, pay attention even when it's not your turn.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's something that our group is definitely guilty of.
Mm-hmm.
I can name a couple names, but I won't. But phones should not be on the table, in my opinion, when you're playing a role-playing game. If you're
mm-hmm.
playing a board game, whatever. You know, but a role-playing game where it's involved like this, you have to pay attention. First of all, it takes up a lot more time if I have to constantly explain and do a recap for every person's turn.
What the last
here's what
did.
Just happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, for like myself, when we play, I do something and then it's not my turn. So I'm thinking about, okay, what am I going to do next?
And see, that's
and
what,
then,
what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to plan out what is my next action.
Yeah. And then, but then that plan could change depending on what happens.
Yeah.
So not only do I think, okay, I'm going to do this, But then someone will do something. Okay, well, maybe I shouldn't do that now, or I should do that, but I should go after a different enemy now because that one is weak and someone else can take care of that.
Right. Or like, because you typically play like an archer. Mm-hmm. So like, I had a great shot and then my friend just stepped in my line of fire.
Yeah.
So now I have to like reposition and yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So, and you know, sometimes I'm probably guilty of taking my phone out just because they're taking a while to decide what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. And so, but I'm still paying attention to a point where once they actually do it, I'm like, okay, they did this, so that's going to affect me how.
Yeah.
You know?
Plus, also, every player should feel like a rock star if you're doing it right while playing the game. Uh-huh. You know, so like the second you do a turn, even if you whiff, you're like, oh man, that was a great try, you know? So for me to be doing my epic turn where I'm going to jump off the thing, have my axe raised over my head, and bring it crashing down on this dude's head. Oh, but you were all playing something on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
And no one saw that happen.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, no one just saw me roll a 20.
Yeah, no one saw me roll a 20. No one saw me roll even the 1. And, like, I went to do that and I accidentally buried the axe in my own chest.
Yeah.
Because I totally, like, whiffed it, you know, whatever. And like I said, it just kills the flow. It kills the amount of time that it takes, you know. What should have been only maybe a 15-minute fight can now take the entire evening.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are just, okay, now what's happening? Sorry. Pay attention.
Yeah. You know?
So overall, those are the kind of suggestions for how to do role-playing games well, you know, both building your character and for when you're actually playing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just reiterate, give yourself some kind of physical traits, you know. If you can, give yourself a backstory. If it's in your desire, maybe think about what kind of alignment your character would want to be,
uh-huh.
you know. Give them some kind of a motivation or goal to reach for as well.
Give them some kind of voice.
Give them some kind of a voice so you can separate them versus you.
Mm-hmm.
And then don't be a rules lawyer. Don't get caught up in the rules. Don't tell other people how to play. And pay attention. Everyone's turn's important, and it could affect yours.
Yeah, you're playing together.
This is, yeah, it's a group game. If you mm-hmm. want to play by yourself, there's the Xbox.
Yeah. Well, thanks to SoCal Games and Comics for letting you come out and check out their D&D day. I believe it's every Tuesday that they do
this. Well, they're doing it. They were so full. I actually was there for the announcement that they're going to start doing Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Wow, yeah. So definitely.
From 6:30 to 8:30.
If you are in the Temecula area, you might want to check that out if you're interested in role-playing games.
Very awesome, yeah.
So now let's change to the dice roll. Okay, so for the dice roll, we decided we wanted to talk about games that just us personally, if we're introducing somebody new to games,
mm-hmm.
what are the ones that we go to first that we're like, you have to play this?
Yeah. It's as soon as someone new joins, oh my God, break this one out again. This is fantastic.
Yeah. And it's games that we feel like kind of help them to acclimate to the group a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who are not super familiar with lots of new games, it kind of gets them in that mode.
Builds
so that
them up,
they
yeah.
know. Yeah. So I'll go first. One of mine, and we've mentioned it many times on the podcast, so if you've been listening, you know one of my favorite games is Ticket to Ride. So the reason I go to Ticket to Ride is because, one, it's very easy to teach.
Yes.
It's not very complicated. It's one of those ones that, you know, you might not be really good at first,
mm-hmm.
but over time you start developing your own strategies and you start seeing the strategy that's there and you can be more competitive in the game.
Well, I think the thing that's good for that too is that it's half strategy, half luck of the draw.
True.
So like even if you do have a great strategy, I'm just not getting any orange cards.
Yes,
you know,
definitely.
Meanwhile, someone else can have an idea of what they're doing and happen to get lucky with a mm-hmm. bunch of rainbow card pulls.
Yeah.
So like, you know, it's... And I like games that are like that. That's kind of half and half.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so definitely that's a good one to begin with. One that I like to be able to use analogies and metaphors to explain things to people. And one game I like to introduce people to is Takedo. Because I'm like, it's like Leapfrog. You mm-hmm. used to play Leapfrog as a kid, you know? Whoever's in the back has to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually you have to jump your way to the front. Or at least, you know, over somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and as you're going along, you're deciding, do I want to stop at the bank or is it more important for me to jump ahead to the scenery to go paint a portrait, you know,
uh-huh.
based upon how you're playing it. But it's essentially you're just all the characters are in one straight shot line. You can never go back.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to try to hit everything along the way, but there's not enough spaces for everyone to hit everything. So you have to prioritize what's the most important to me. Am I willing to skip all this other stuff to get here instead?
Uh-huh, yeah. And it's not... It can be played super competitive, but it can also not be played super competitive.
Mm-hmm. It just depends on what kind of group you're in. Yeah.
Yeah. Another one that I like is Mysterium. And the reason I like Mysterium is it's very similar to Clue in many ways.
Yeah.
And most people, especially our age, have at least played Clue once in their life. So it's something somewhat familiar to
them. Oh, yeah. I've compared it as saying it's Clue 2.0.
Yeah. It's what I always tell people is it's like Clue, but better.
Yeah.
Because essentially here you are being communicated to by like this ghost essentially, who is telling you these kind of in vague terms who they were and how they, or who was their murderer essentially. Yeah. So it's kind of like playing Clue a little bit in a different way, essentially.
Mm-hmm. And it's all about interpretation, too.
Yeah. And there is somewhat of an element of working together.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also nice if you have somebody new to the group.
And you're right also to pick that one because, like I said, it's about interpretation. Mm-hmm. So it kind of lets you see into their mindset for how does this person think?
Yeah.
How does this person reason and logic and what perceptions? Because if I show you a card from Mysterium that has, and always the cards have like, half a dozen things going on in them.
Yeah.
It's kind of like one of those, like, whatever you see first in this picture is the most important to you.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Is it the red that stands out to you? Or
is it the fact that there's a rat eating a piece of cheese? Or is it maybe the fact that there's a bunny rabbit in the background that's, mm-hmm. like, staring the rat going, what are you doing? Uh-huh. You know, kind of thing, you know? So it's kind of like, yeah, whatever stands out to you more kind of shows, like, oh, this person sees colors. This person, she sees shapes. Or this person is more literal with how they're interpreting the thing. Like, I don't know, any of these items have anything to do with a rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. Like, well, maybe it's not that. Maybe it's the color. But,
yeah.
Another one that's kind of card-based that also I think is interesting, kind of gives it an insight into how people like process and what likes and dislikes they have would be awkward family photos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that one, it's really hilarious, real-life pictures of family photos that people have. And then you're playing cards that are based upon quotes from movies.
Yeah.
So, like, they might choose the one that they honestly think fits the best or just, oh, I love Austin Powers. I gotta go with the Austin Powers
card.
Yeah,
and what's nice about it is it's very funny. It's very easy. Mm-hmm. It's very quick.
Yeah.
And what I like about it, as opposed to maybe some of the other, like, kind of popular, like, your Cards Against Humanity or something like mm-hmm. that, is although there are some more adult quotes, for the most part, it's not super unfamily friendly.
No.
And that way, if you just met someone, sometimes Cards Against Humanity can be a little bit much because you don't know necessarily everybody's sense of humor.
Yeah.
So this is kind of a nice medium ground.
I would agree. Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's any quotes on the cards that have like direct like swear words on them.
I think there's a couple.
Oh, is there a couple?
Yeah. Okay. But they're easy to weed out too if you need to.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So if you want to play it with like a family, you could take those out.
Yeah. And like, you know, just quickly just 5 minutes to rifle through.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's an F-bomb.
Probably, I want to say probably when you buy the game, the cards might be separated in that order. But
oh, that's
because
good.
We
don't care.
We don't care. We've just mixed them all in. So we would probably have to go and pull ours out.
True.
But I think possibly they might have like kind of, these are the really family friendly ones here, you know, and it kind of progresses.
Yeah. And I like that. Yeah. And I would hope, I mean, I don't know if this one has any expansions to it or like a sequel. I would love another one of this because we've kind of played through that game a couple times to like have seen all the pictures, you know, but I would love to have more pictures. So definitely that's a great one. Yeah.
Another kind of party game that's good for a group is Cash and Guns. And the reason I choose this is one, once again, very easy to explain.
Yeah, point this gun at whoever you don't like.
Yeah, essentially. But it's easy to explain. And also, the foam guns are silly and fun.
They're cute.
And, you know, it's a game that people always end up laughing and having a good time. And it's a good way for someone who's new to a gaming group to kind of get used to the group and to kind of get that rapport going,
yeah.
I feel like.
And it's a simple enough concept.
Yeah.
It's a gun standoff. On the count of three, everyone pick up your gun and we're going to get into a standoff.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to decide, is this person bluffing or are they not bluffing?
Yeah.
You know? And it's kind of like a psychological reading the person game, you know?
Uh-huh.
And like, yeah, it's, you know, oh, wow, she had a great poker face, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, pointing foam guns at each other is...
With orange tips with so orange they don't tips. Look like
yeah.
they're real.
Yeah, and I know some people may have a problem with that, especially families and stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, for a bunch of adults, it reminds us sort of being little kids playing with like water guns or something like that. It's silly, you know?
Yeah, and then, I mean, you can even make it a bit more personal. Like, I remember one time you were pointing the gun at me, and I said, really? To me? The love of your life? And you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
To you, the guy who thinks he's the love of my life. It's like that could laugh at everybody, you know? So, yeah, it's definitely one that invites a lot of jokes and a lot of, like, playful banter, I would say, you know? Like, because you can actually, in this game, talk someone down.
Mm-hmm.
You can be like, you need to put that gun down. or things will go bad for you. Like, how bad? Like, you're walking home bad, you know, kind of thing. So it's interesting on how that dynamic can kind of come out and play. And it invites a lot more of charismatic players to do well, I think.
True, so
if that's a skill that you have, you're going to do fantastic.
And it definitely, in some cases, brings people out of their shell.
Yeah, I think. I think the idea of having a gun pointed at you and pointing your gun at someone else brings you out of your shell a little
bit. Yeah, yeah. It's definitely, like I said, it's always sort of a crowd pleaser. I don't think we've ever introduced it to someone and not had them like the game.
Yeah. The only downside, I think, is just that it's better with more people.
Yes, it is better with more
people. I would say at least five.
Yeah, it's definitely a party game.
It's a fantastic one.
Yeah.
And then the last one we're going to mention that I think is great is Forbidden Island. It is a simple kind of almost like a puzzle game where it's you have so many actions you can do and so many various things that you need to do, and it's all about figuring out your strengths and weaknesses and working as a team. It's a cooperative game.
Yeah,
it encourages a team building dynamic. And the thing I like the most about it is that it has pretty much how your entire turn can be laid out on a little card you could hold in your hand.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not a constant, like, can I see the rule book again?
Or can you explain it to me again?
Everything's explained to you, and about 6 bullet points on one side of the card, and on the other side is your special ability that only you can do. So you can just, okay, I can do that. Oh, and that works for this. Okay, great.
Yeah. And what I really like, too, I really like introducing cooperative games to new players like that. Because, one, I think cooperative is one of those things that's not common in, like, the games we remember from our childhood.
No.
It's kind of I don't want to say it's a new thing, but it's a new thing to people who are new to gaming. And it's also a great way for new players to come in because we're not playing against each other. We're playing with each other. So my helping you doesn't feel like you're leaning on me too much. Or it doesn't feel like, oh, well, I'm dumb and I don't know. It's, no, we're working together. Well, so it kind of allows that player to ease into the game and not feel so much like a newbie.
Plus, it's a good pickup game to get your confidence boosted.
Yeah.
So that way, when you do start to get into more competitive things, then you're like, well, I mean, I know that we're having a good time, and I had a great time when we all won or lost that one other one together that we were working with, you know. So it's kind of like a tune-up game.
Yeah,
you know. So
yeah.
Like, okay, well, we're gonna play this to like kind of get in the mode of like, you know, here's how we're getting our brains going, and then we're gonna get into the more hardcore stuff.
Yeah, and it's a really good way to like introduce people to modern games. I think is to do something that's cooperative.
Plus, also, yeah, it's not your traditional like, here's the path laid out before you roll the dice kind of board game.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. It kind of switches up what people think of when they think of board games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that traditional, like, when you think of your Monopolies and your Clues,
yeah.
And then you show them this because you're like, no, those games are old. You don't want to play those games. Let's play these new games. This is like a good
paradigm. Because Forbidden Island, it's actually composed of, I think 20 tiles that are laid out in a different orientation than you might think.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just a straight square. It's like a square with like two on either side. So
yeah,
4x4.
And it can change
and
every time.
Every single time it can be a different orientation. Yeah. So it's never the same game twice. It's never something that you can just know what the masterful pattern is.
Yeah.
You know, you got to analyze it and evaluate it every single time, case by case.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So you can always keep going back to it too.
And it does create a little bit more too of a level playing field then, because the grid's going to be different pretty much every time. So.
And the thing I like about that game, especially for new players and cooperation, is that if one person fails,
everybody
fails.
Yeah, there's
no
loser.
If one person drowns in that game, the game is over for everybody. It's not keep going without me. Mm-hmm. It's, well, then we're gone.
Yeah.
We're done because Melissa decided she couldn't swim. You know.
So those are our kind of, those are the games we would go to if we have new players joining us.
If you have a game that you would go to or tend to go to when new players join your group, let us know on Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah, we definitely like to know that.
Yeah. So for now, though, let's go into our escape room report.
It is escape time, and this time we have a really great room for you. This time we went to Trapped Escape Adventures. This room was in Upland, California. Now, Trapped also has two other locations. They have a Las Vegas location, and they just opened a San Dimas, California location.
Can I just say, I have one pet peeve about this location or this company. I just, I'm looking at the title of the company, Trapped, a real-life room escape adventure. It just doesn't flow. Like, I feel like from a marketing standpoint, you kind of maybe worked on that a little bit. Give that another run through the draft system, you know?
Yeah, it's just funny because there's a lot of escape rooms that use, like, Trapped or Exit or, like, there's a lot.
I get it. You definitely see there's a lot certain, of, There's certain adjectives that you got to throw in there so people get it.
Yeah.
But, like, I want one that's just called, like, Penguin Games. You know, or something, you know, it's just, you know, out there, but then people don't know what you're out
about.
You know, but.
So the location we did in Upland, they have three different rooms, and we did their room that's called Down the Rabbit Hole.
Mm-hmm. Which was immediately apparent that it's going to be an Alice in Wonderland themed one. But thankfully, it was very and pleasantly different.
Yeah, it's kind of cool because, yes, it is very similar to an Alice in Wonderland, but that's not the story that's happening
here. No, because I was like, okay, we're going to go through the little door. Then we're going to go to the Mad Tea Party. We might come across the Queen's Courtroom.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah,
but
blah.
But it's
and as
not,
soon as you enter, you're like, oh, this is not what this is at all.
Yeah, it's like a completely different story. It's similar to that theme, but it's a different story.
And I like the story that they give you because normally they give you a little video presentation in the beginning of like, here's your story, here's the instructions, blah, blah, blah. And sometimes it's the person like talking to the camera, giving you a story. Sometimes it's a little cute cartoon animation. This time it's a cartoon.
Sometimes it's just the game master talking, telling you this.
Yeah, but you know, usually there's some kind of prologue.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, it's really cute. It's your dog ran away and always comes back and brings you stuff that's like, where did you get this?
Yeah.
You know, and then one day you decide to follow your dog. You see he goes down this rabbit hole. You're like, oh crap, I just lost my dog. Mm-hmm. Like, let me go get my dog back. And then you go down and then you discover, oh, I'm in the White Rabbit's house. This is literally the hole that Alice fell down.
Uh-huh.
But like, this is well after Alice.
Yeah.
And like, I'm in the house now.
Uh-huh.
Fantastic. Let's start. And so essentially you're not trying to escape from Wonderland. You're just trying to find your dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And basically the rabbit gives you, not only are you trying to find your dog, but he needs something and you are finding, your dog has it essentially.
And it's cute because the rabbit calls him the little fuzzy.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have a word for dog.
Yeah. And what's really cute is, so you go in the room, basically they just lead you in the room and they said, you know, your game will start or whatever.
Have fun.
And then, the rabbit's voice starts and he's telling you this.
Mm-hmm.
The, like, they have, I think we determined it's like a voice changer that they use. They have like pre-recorded, but then they also later on will have a voice changer. It is the cutest thing ever.
It is like literally, okay, so essentially what it is you're in the White Rabbit's house and he is like, oh no, there's people coming. So he went into his panic room in the attic. He's literally
he's
in a
hiding,
panic room
yeah.
and he's talking through this little metal pipe thing.
Yeah.
And so it's the cutest little like chipmunk voice.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And what's really cool is that's also the hint system.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get lost, you talk into the metal pipe and he will tell you something. And they kind of use like they have some pre-recorded messages, but then also the game master has like a voice changer that will make his voice like that and he can also tell you things. And it's just a super cute hint system.
Yeah. And
it's super on theme, which is the thing we're always saying. It would make no sense to have a walkie-talkie in this room.
No. And what's also really fun is that even like the clock and the time, it's a weird looking clock and it's got cute little animations that run on it because the clock is not going to be a normal clock. You
yeah.
know? So it feels like it fits there.
Mm-hmm.
Feels like something the White Rabbit would have in his house. And the little tiny furniture is adorable.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the big thing. This location, it's in a normal, not industrial park, but like a business park where you'd have like a dentist office or, you know, all sorts of different things. It's upstairs. It's in this very nondiscreet business office.
Mm-hmm.
And so as soon as we walk in, I'm like, oof.
Expectations are dragging.
Low. Yeah. I'm like, oh, great. We've been to ones that are in these kind of places. There's usually not much they can do.
Buckle up. We're going to go through a lot of white walls with pictures on them.
Yeah, exactly. That is not the case.
I literally believed I was in the ground underneath possibly a tree or something that somebody had actually dug this into raw
earth. You feel like you've been shrunk into this or something.
Yeah, it felt fantastic.
Yeah.
There's not a single solid wall. It's all like earthen looking, like
or
styrofoam
looking,
or whatever, you know, wood looking. It is on point, great for decoration, A+.
Yeah, it's super cute.
Everything is like just the right height for what you would assume to be like a 3-foot-tall rabbit on his hind legs, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And everything in the room makes sense. And like everything, there's no like red herrings.
Mm-mm.
Everything is used. And anything that like any furniture that is not used is clearly bolted down so you don't waste all this time turning things over or messing things up.
And there's no major logic leaps either.
There's everything
one or two
makes
times
sense.
That we need to ask for a clue, but once we got the clue, we kind of were like, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah.
Like, I should have realized.
Yeah, it's not a super difficult room by any means. But it's just, it's like...
It's a super fair room, though.
It's a super fair
room. It's fair. It's challenging, but fair.
Mm-hmm.
All of the information is there. You just have to recognize that this picture on the wall of the Mad Hatter and the March Hare and what they're holding is important, not necessarily the picture itself.
Yeah.
You know, or the frame is important or whatever. You know?
Yeah. And a lot of the puzzles... Like, they make sense with the story. You know, you're not doing a bunch of combination locks. In fact, I don't think there are any combination locks.
No, there's not a single
one. There's no, like, there's some key locks, maybe, or some pressure sensor
There was one directional lock, but it's cleverly disguised.
It's not your traditional, those little handhold master locks that are directional.
It's like a directional lock, but it's bigger. It's like the size of a dinner plate.
Yeah.
And it makes it look like a compass. Mm-hmm. So you're actually going north, south, east, west, you know.
Yeah. It's super clever. I mean, it really felt like it reminded me of... When you're at Disneyland and you go to Toontown and you go in their houses.
Yeah, it's like, exactly
that. That is the level of theming that we're talking
that's
about.
That's literally, if they made the White Rabbit's house at Disneyland, it would be this.
Yeah, it's just super cute. The cool thing about this room, too, is we actually took two people that we've never done rooms with before.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this other couple. And one of them, he had done a couple rooms before.
Yeah.
But his girlfriend had never done a room before. So this was the first time.
And she lit up when she saw that room.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like,
oh! Because she's super into cute things.
Yeah.
She loves porgs. So she's like, this is fantastic.
She's a huge Disney fan. So this room really resonated with her. And it was such a good room. And she really was able, you know... It was a room where we were able to, it wasn't linear, so we were able to kind of split up and do different things, so there was enough for us to do. I don't think you'd want to get too many people in the room.
Is a little bit cramped.
It can be a little cramped.
But I will say this, it's not low ceiling. It is.
Yeah,
the ceiling's high enough. I'm 6 foot, and I didn't feel any problems. Maybe there's a doorway, I think. We did this a little while ago. I think one of the doorways had to crouch a little bit to get through, but like the ceilings are fine.
Yeah, the room goes up to 6. That might be pushing it a little, but that also is, it's not just one room. It does open up.
Into 2 or 3,
and
yeah.
Yeah, so not everyone has to be in the same room at the same time.
And actually, you kind of have to not be in the same room at the same time to do a few
of
the puzzles.
Yeah, some of the puzzles you have to
Which
be in
I do like.
Rooms.
I like how some puzzles you have to do part here and part over there, and you have to have someone to communicate in between.
Yeah, exactly. In some cases, you literally have to have a partner in the room. Mm-hmm. You could not do it without someone else to talk through it. The other thing about this room that I think is really good is it is family friendly. Kids could definitely participate in this room.
Yeah.
There's nothing that's too hard for kids. There's nothing that's scary. It's, you know, a lot of escape rooms out there, there's a lot of scary ones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not all scary, but it's kind of something that they, you know, it's an easy thing to do to make it scary.
Oh, yeah.
And so I like that this room goes away from that and, like, just has something that's a fun experience.
Mm-hmm. And it has even other kind of fantasy... fairy tale references that's not necessarily
Alice in Wonderland. Yeah, they have a lot of Easter eggs in the room. That was fun.
But not actual Easter eggs.
Well,
this is not the Easter Bunny.
But no, but I know you know what I mean.
Yeah.
There's
you know,
a labyrinth reference.
Yeah, there is you know, all sorts of fun stuff. And it's just everything is so cool.
Yeah.
You know, and the way that they do it. At one point, there's this puzzle that you have to do. There's like a whole bunch of stuff and you're like, I gotta narrow this down. And eventually you get this clock that's like a portrait of the Cheshire Cat smiling on there,
mm-hmm.
but he's missing teeth. And if you hold that up just right and in front of you, you're like, oh, that's how I select which ones it is. It's not the fact that it's like, oh, these ones are similar or whatever. It's that. And it's like, that's cool, you know. But also there's this logic puzzle in there, and logic puzzles are right up my alley.
Yeah.
I do them for fun. And I like how it's not just a plain piece of paper and a pencil on the thing or whatever. They give you, like, a cute little chalkboard that the rabbit would have been writing, like, his to-do list or grocery list on, you know? And, like, you can use that, you know?
Yeah.
So that's really fun. And, like, I was actually having a good time. Like, okay, it's not this. It's not that, you know?
Uh-huh.
And there's no real one right way to do it. It's however you can get through that puzzle. Sure, you know.
Yeah, and that's definitely one I think kids would have fun with, too, because it makes them, it's educational.
Yeah.
It makes them use their brains. In fact, we liked this room so much. We really wanted to take two of our friends that we do rooms with a lot. We were like, oh my gosh, we want to take them. But of course, you know, it's always hard when you've already done a room because you already know. And so it's like, do we really want to redo this room? and just stand back and let them do it.
I'm not going to pay $60 to stand there and watch them do
it. Yeah, but what actually, it worked out perfect because we told them about this and it just happened. They had a family member in town and they needed something to do. And we're like, well, you know, you could go do this room. We actually had a discount code for it. Maybe you should go do that with her. And they did it with her like literally days after we did it. And they loved it and their guest loved it. Mm-hmm. And so that was a really fun experience they were able to have. So we definitely started racking up business for the place already. And we are super excited to go back and do their other two rooms.
In fact, I kind of want to go do one right now since we're done talking about this. Like, let's go get ice cream. Let's go do that. Let's go do their other ones because they got two more. One's called Sector 13, which feels like one of those kind of science-y things. Maybe there's a monster involved. I don't know. And the other one's just called The Lair of the Puzzle Master. Don't know much about that, but I'd be willing to like just take a blind chance. Considering how good this one is, the rabbit hole, I'm willing to just, yes, I will put my trust and faith in you. Do not let me down.
It's hard because, okay, so at the time we are recording this, we have also just done another escape room earlier in the day.
And don't you want to cleanse your palate from that horrible one?
And it was a bad room. And so remembering this room and how great it was, it's like, yeah, we do kind of are like tempted to, oh, let's clean our palate and let's do this better room. Once again, that room was down the rabbit hole at Trapped and in Upland, California.
Now, I have a question for you, Lauren.
I'm not sure.
I was going to say, can you check the locations? Because they have a location in Las Vegas. Vegas, baby, Vegas.
They do not have it in Vegas. They have different rooms in Vegas.
In Vegas, it looks like they had one called One-Eyed Jack.
Yeah.
And also that Lair of the Puzzle Master.
They had one of the same rooms, but the other rooms were different. Yeah, and they have something different in San Dimas.
Called Operation X-13.
Yeah.
Whatever that is. That sounds like a cyborg alien, maybe secret spy kind of thing.
Yeah, it looks like at each of their locations. So a couple of their locations, for instance, we're looking at the Vegas one right now. It has a room called Lair of the Puzzle Master, which is also in their Upland one. It also has that Operation X-13, which is at their new San Dimas location. But it has the One-Eyed Jack, which is at not all the other locations.
Can you click on One-Eyed Jack? I'm honestly curious.
Oh, God. He's going to make me drive to Vegas, guys.
Oh, okay. One-Eyed Jack is a serial killer.
Yeah.
I was thinking something else completely.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, maybe something to do with like a card shark.
Or Jack the Ripper.
Or Jack the Ripper, but that's also a serial killer. But no, yeah. So, okay.
Yeah. And I mean, okay. Serial killer is kind of a cliche room. But since they did such a good job with their other rooms, I have trust in them that this will be
good. I would put my faith.
Yeah.
The San Dimas one, I think it just opened recently.
It just opened.
So, like, they only have the one room. Mm-hmm. So, if you are out that way, I would maybe recommend checking out Operation X-13. But definitely keep in touch with them to find out, are they going to do...
It's also family friendly. So, that's a good thing, too.
And that's the other thing I like about there. Because we've talked about how check the sites and see how it looks. I'm looking at the site right now. First of all, there's a good red sticker on it that says family friendly. Yeah. So I know immediately I can take my kids to this.
Yeah, and it's nice because I think that's something common where people, you know, one, there's just a lot of people too who they don't want to do scary rooms. And a lot of times if it's family friendly, that means it's not scary.
Mm-hmm.
But also there's people who are like, hey, I have kids and I can't just leave them to go do these rooms. I want them to go with us. I want this to be a family experience, something we can all do together.
It's a family affair.
Yeah. I mean, really, escape rooms are team building group exercises. You know, we do them with our friends. I think it makes us closer to our friends because we've all learned to work together and things like that and team build. It also is probably really good fun for a family.
Yeah, exactly. So I would definitely recommend this place, and I'm willing to take a chance again on another one.
For sure.
Don't worry, guys. Next episode, we're talking about that horrible escape room that we did.
Yes, it's coming.
We'll definitely get into that. I mean, I can't not talk about
it. We know you love the bad ones just as much as you love the good ones.
As they say, the only thing better than a perfect meal is a perfect meal with one critical flaw that you can pick apart, like all night, you know?
Yes.
I'm a huge Frasier fan, guys. So,
okay, from one favorite to another, let's talk our Friday favorites. So, Greg, it's that time again. It's Friday favorites.
Friday favorites. One of my ever-growing favorites, even on Thursdays.
So, what is the game that is on your mind this month?
As much as I really would like to go play Time Stories again because we just recently bought two expansions.
Mm.
And I hate to say this, but I did not get them in order. I know that they are labeled episode 2 through 6 or whatever.
But we're rebels.
But I don't know if that matters as much. And I was like, yeah, but I want the dragon medieval theme one.
So you're chaotic good?
A little bit. Yeah, I'm chaotic good. Yeah, I'm going to go for that. Sure. I'm a good guy, but like, oh, I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm actually at Chaotic Evil and you just don't know it yet. Wait till I get that, that, you know, handcuffs and the cigar, you know. But no, I think the game I really would like to play this coming Friday is a good old game of Pandemic. We've been playing Legacy with a certain group of friends.
Slowly.
And that's like, you know, going through. Uh-huh. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a straight...
Just old-fashioned.
Well, I mean, I have the one expansion on the Brink, which adds new characters with different abilities. Uh-huh. That's also a game that I love, by the way, because you can roleplay a little bit. Like, you have the name like, I'm Scotty McGee, uh-huh, and, you yeah. know, I'm the medic, and no, I don't gonna go over there. You know, you can give a little bit of background, you know, you can make a little pawn talk. But, yeah, I think just a good old-fashioned, not everything that the world is in, that this horrible state of repair that we've left it in, you know, because, guys, I'm keeping a journal of what we've done every game for Pandemic, and I'm going to release it at the end. Things got really bad.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty much like the southern half of the equator
is gone.
It's like a forbidden zone. Yeah. I think the only thing south of the equator that's still good is like the Philippines, Australia, and like a little bit of India. Mm-hmm. But like the rest of it's gone.
Yeah, South America and Africa, we're so sorry.
We just...
we tried.
Things got out of hand in South America and it spread. It got really bad. So I want to go back to a more peaceful...
And
everything's okay. Yeah. Everything's good. Mommy's brushing my hair.
Yeah.
It's all right.
And if you follow us on Instagram, you will know which of what we named our diseases and you will know which one has gotten crazy and you will get that joke.
And we named it that before...
Before.
It went bad.
Yeah.
So. I should point that out. We named it immediately.
We didn't know.
And then things went bad and we're like... Oh, man, this is happening.
But it makes sense to our current climate.
So I want to play that game, but I just don't want the pressure.
Yeah, it's tense.
I don't want the pressure and the stress of, like, I'm looking at South America, just seeing a burning wasteland of nothing.
So for my Friday favorite this week is actually a new game that we got to play on one of our recent game nights. Mm. It was actually those two newbies we mentioned that have joined our groups. They've now been indoctrined enough that they're starting to purchase their own games, which is great. Because,
and we're adding their games to our online list.
We have an online list now so that we know what people have, so we know what to ask people to bring for game night. But she got this super cute game, our friend Melissa.
I knew you were going to go here.
It's called Unstabled Unicorns.
Yes.
And it's super cute.
And I won the first one.
You did, but I almost won.
You almost did.
And then Greg
and
turned everyone
against me. And I snuck it in.
Yeah, Greg turned everyone against me. And they got so worried about defeating me, they let Greg, like, sneak in there and win.
So that would now make me what? Chaotic good. Chaotic neutral?
I don't know.
Right then I was playing chaotic neutral. I was like, guys, listen.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's just a card game. It doesn't take up too much space, I don't feel like. And basically you're sort of building a herd of unicorns, essentially.
Yeah.
And
they'll have, some of them have different abilities.
Some of them have different abilities.
Just basic.
And then some of them have extra things you can put on. Like one of mine had, you could give your unicorn an extra tail and that allowed me to pick two cards.
Mm-hmm.
And
that was a really powerful.
It was. Yeah. It really helped because I could build up stuff faster
and
than
everything
else.
Has rainbows all over it.
Everything's rainbow. There's lots of funny, ideas about, you know, like, Greg had a zombie unicorn.
I had a zombie unicorn that let me, like, go through the Discord and take unicorns that people had lost. Uh-huh. So as soon as you lose a powerful unicorn, well, that's mine now.
Yeah. I had one that was, like, a hipster unicorn. Mm-hmm. I had one that was a chubby unicorn, so he counted as two.
And we also played with the expansion, the adult...
Yes, there's an adult
X-rated expansion. If you are into and okay with things like that, and if you're the age to play with that, I highly recommend
it. There's some really funny things.
It had me howling with laughter.
Yeah, and it's just funny with that juxtaposition of unicorns.
It just
makes it even funnier.
It's just to see those items, but like rainbow colored,
uh-huh.
It was interesting. And like how other places they took it, you know, like,
yeah.
It was just so... hysterically fantastic.
Yeah, it's a very clever game. It was fun. I was surprising because I thought it was going to be a much lighter game, and it actually like took a while and was more, you know, like we said, I was so close to winning, and then I kind of got decimated, and suddenly Greg built himself up.
It's one of those games where don't think that you're down and out just because someone else is in the head, because something can happen that completely turns the table.
Yeah, it reminds me in a way of Munchkin in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
On how the tides can turn.
Yeah, so it's like everybody at one point was really positioned to like be the winner.
Uh-huh.
And I honestly at one point was like, well, I'm not going to win, but I'm going to keep playing because it's fun.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think I got this. Like, you know, I had a plan. It's like, if I can just survive these two turns, I think I got it.
Yeah. So yeah, so Unstable Unicorns. That was my...
And also, the title's a great double play on words because the unicorns, they're kind of unstable. You know, so... But okay, the best part. I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to say this. Uh-huh. You start off with the little baby unicorn.
And they have like different...
And they all have unicorns. Different things.
Mine had a shotgun.
Mine had an upside down face, like its mouth is where its forehead should be, and its nose was like where its mouth should be, or whatever.
It was like the derpy one.
And they picked that for me when I was in the bathroom away. Like, yeah. I was in the bathroom and I, you know, was doing, you know, what you do. And then I came back and was like, oh, we picked a unicorn for you. Which one? Oh, derp face one? Thanks. One of our friends, he had one. Wasn't it like sucking on a grenade?
Yeah, and then there was,
and like the key was next to it, so yeah, like, there was that like thing's gonna go off.
Evil ones. There was, you know, happy cute ones.
There was a demon
there
one.
There was a narwhal one.
Oh, that's the thing too. They get creative. They do like rhinos are unicorns, right?
Yeah.
Narwhals are unicorns,
unicorn
right?
Of the sea.
Yeah.
So that's what my Friday favorite this week.
Pretty good. I you know what? I think I'm gonna forego my Friday favorite for yours if we can get her to bring it over. I got it. Well, maybe we can do both. We'll try to marry the two.
We got to introduce it to a bigger audience, too.
Yeah, it's fun. Worth it. All right, before we wrap things up for this month, let's take a minute to hear from our friends over at the Unspoken Sports Podcast.
Game ticket, $50. Hot dog, $8. Team store item, $25.
Y'all talk about to beat him with one hand tied behind my back. With some glasses on, with one eye lens out, with some flip-flops on in the rain.
Having to listen to someone's dumb sports opinions? Worthless. Some people shouldn't talk sports. For everyone else, there's the Unspoken Podcast, available on most podcasting platforms, and on the web at theunspokensportspodcast.weebly.com.
So I think that does it for this episode of Friday's Game Night. Music for this episode was provided by bensound.com. As always, you can find us anywhere podcasts are available. Rates and reviews on iTunes are much appreciated, as it really helps new listeners find our podcast. We can be found at Game Friday on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Please come and talk games with us. Thanks for listening.
What ho and goodbye, fair listeners. Welcome to the land of Friday's Game Nights, and I bid thee farewell. May your journeys take you to the everlasting realm of roleplay, where you can forever talk like this.